The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
And we're here, hour two, Sports Talk 1240 on 1240 WGBB. I'm Andy Segal, bringing it here on the 9 o'clock hour. Got a busy show today, a couple big guests, and I'm at a point here, this show might get so busy, I may not even have a minute to talk about the fact that Aaron Judge struck out in his 37th straight game. Oh, wait, I just did. Like I said, big show today. We have two guests, including Larry Davis, former vice president for Steiner Sports, and Derek Hagan, former New York Giants wide receiver and current sideline reporter for Arizona State University's football team out in Tempe. So we'll be talking to him about college football season and what the Sun Devils can be expecting from this year. Before we get Larry on, I'm just going to talk a little bit about the fact that Aaron Judge, guy is struggling hard. He is hitting under 200 since the All-Star break. He struck out in a Major League Baseball record 37 straight games. And that's for a team like the Yankees, who are trying to get into the playoffs and compete for the division, which at this point they're fading a little out of there. They're 5 games behind Boston. You can't have a guy hitting third in the order that's striking out in every single game. And with that, I'm going to bring in Larry Davis. Larry, Aaron Judge balls on Steiner are selling for $375. Do you agree with that?
I think I don't agree with it, but, you know, it's selling at Steiner Sports, but the real people who did the deal was Fanatics. So it's really not a Steiner Sports thing. Probably you go on Fanatics.com, it might be less.
All right. We're gonna introduce you. You were the former vice president of Steiner for a decade. And I'm sure the stories that you saw and heard throughout your time there have got to be incredible.
They could be. I mean, depending on the player and depending on the time. But if you want to just talk a little Aaron Judge, I mean, let's discuss that. I mean, Steiner Sports did not get him. They thought they would, I guess, and here we are. Aaron signs with Fanatics, which is a close to a $1 billion company. They are the biggest sports company in the world. And that's a big loss, I believe, for Steiner Sports not to get Aaron Judge, who's one of the hottest players in baseball and could become the new Yankee face. But, again, as you know, Andy, sports is consistency, and we need to see what he does next year.
And one of the big things you just said there, that Fanatics is a $1 billion organization. And this is something that we've spoken about in the past, that the word billion is thrown around in sports like candy, because every major league is a $1 billion franchise.
I think every major league, right, is one major league baseball, football, basketball, hockey, maybe even soccer. And then inside those leagues, you have a few teams, a handful. I don't think a lot of them, but a handful of teams are in the $1 billion range. I think the Forbes list came out maybe a month ago, and leading that was the America's team, Dallas Cowboys, over $4 billion. I think they were $4.2 billion, 4.3. I think the Yankees were second, and in the top 10 were a couple other football franchises. The Redskins, I think, were up there. Andy, am I correct? Any other teams that you can think of that were up there in National Football League?
I believe the Jets were up there actually as well. They were up in the $2 billion range, if I remember correctly.
But they're probably in the $2 billion. Yeah, they're probably not in the top. They might be in the top 10 in the NFL, and it just goes to show. Here's another interesting thing to talk about. It's not about the fans. I mean, I don't want all you listeners to think, oh, you know, Larry's not being nice, but man, it's not about us buying tickets. It doesn't matter. There is so much money in these TV and radio contracts, the local as well as the national. And as you could tell with ESPN struggling to stay afloat because they're not doing such great business, you know, making as much money as they can because they give these leagues so much money, including TNT and the NBA. But that's where the money is. So us fans thinking, oh, we pay the fees for the players, we really don't. So whether the Yankees have 45,000 people a game or 27,000 people a game, that machine will still roll no matter how many people are in the stands.
So how did we get to the point where billion-dollar contract or billion-dollar franchises are popping up and multi-hundreds of millions of dollars of TV deals that are being thrown around to all the leagues? How did we get to this point?
Well, because I think that sports is the real live reality TV. So, you know, probably within the last decade, Andy, we have gotten into reality TV is what a lot of people want to watch, as you know, in a lot of channels. But if you think about it, a lot of them are scripted, if not all of them, in somehow, some way. Sports is not. Even though the bettors will say, oh, yeah, the game is fixed and all that stuff, and that has not been proven. And we'll get that into a second, Andy, about the gambling that's coming to all major sports. But I think what happened is this is the only real reality, so they pay top dollar for it. And then you look at the sponsorship deals. How much, Andy, is it for Budweiser to say the official beer of the NFL? Another $100 million deal. So where is this money coming from, Andy? All the product endorsements that are out there, whether they're for the league as well as per team, and like we discussed earlier, the TV and radio. I would give more of the radio to the bigger markets and the smaller markets, New York, Chicago, L.A. That's where the big money is. And let's not forget when the Dodgers were sold a couple of years ago, I forget the owner's name. I think it was Frank
McCourt.
Remember, Andy?
Frank McCourt.
Frank McCourt. Yeah, I think that was right. You know, he was waiting on that big deal from the sports network out in L.A. And that, I think, is a record-breaking deal. I think he gets more money for they get more money for the Dodgers because they bought the team from him. And that's what gave him the huge, huge dollar was the TV deal that he had signed. So that's where these teams have become billion-dollar franchises. And, again, like anyone who owns a business, you want to own your own property. So if you're just a regular retail guy, you want to own the building where your business is. Well, these stadiums are owned by most of the owners. The owners own the stadiums. The ones who own the stadiums are the ones also with the real estate money are the ones that have billion-dollar franchises.
And a lot of these guys have been successful in businesses outside of sports so that they were able to get the funds to purchase these teams, much like Woody Johnson, where, you know, he was the head of Johnson & Johnson, where they, you know, they make all the products like soap and Band-Aids and things like that. So he was able to get that kind of money elsewhere and then, you know, multiply that by four or five-fold by owning a sports franchise.
Well, I think you're right. I would think most of them, if not, I can't say all of them, but most of them, but you look right here in the New York area, except the New York Football Giants, the Mara, Wellington Mara family. The Maras, you know, had the franchise in the 20s, 30s, and 40s, and they, you know, built this empire, and they were just in the right place at the right time, and the NFL has exploded, as we've discussed, into a billion-dollar business. And maybe the Rooneys. I think the Rooneys maybe in Pittsburgh also were one of those. I don't know any others. There could be some others, but you're right. Most of these owners made their money in other businesses and then, of course, got into the NFL. And look at the business they are in. They are in one of the greatest businesses in the United States and maybe even the world because all these sports are smart. Their commissioners are very smart, and they're going global. As you can see, how many NFL games are going to be in London or Mexico City this year? How many NBA games are going to be outside of the country? You know, slowly but surely it's coming. And I wonder, Andy, when will we see in these other major sports a franchise that's part of the league that's not in the United States?
That's always a possibility there. You know, there's been talk of an NFL team possibly moving to London. That's been shot down, but I'm sure that's still on the table somewhere. But and then one of the teams that is moving is the Oakland Raiders. They're going to Las Vegas, and that's opening Pandora's box, where now you have two major franchises in the Las Vegas area, or going to be in the Las Vegas area in the next 5 years. And you discussed earlier about gambling in sports. Does that kind of having two professional teams in Vegas, does that open up Pandora's box to that, or is it kind of just going to flow?
Well, I think the two other ways that they're going to make huge money is gambling, and then let's not forget the NBA is starting it this year the way they do it in racing, branding on uniforms. You're going to see it this year. They already do it in the WNBA. So the NBA is going to have that this year. I think the Celtics did a deal. I think the Knicks did a deal. So you're going to see it. I don't think they're going to do as much as they do on professional uniforms as they do in race car driving. But you never know, because it's just another cash cow. And then you got Commissioner Silva, Adam Silva. And you've also heard Commissioner Stern, who's the ex-commissioner, both saying on record that gambling is coming, and they will be all for it in the NBA. So, yes, you're saying that there's teams in Vegas, there's an NHL team, and there's a football team. The Raiders are moving within a few years. And then I would think an NBA team will be there. They already do the summer league there. So those are the two biggest other ways that these leagues are going to just make tons of money, gambling and putting promotions on the uniforms.
One of the big things in gambling now with sports is the daily fantasy. You got companies like DraftKings and FanDuel, and they made money hand over fist over the last couple of years with people getting to do the weekly fantasy leagues and, you know, getting paid out from that. Where else can these leagues stand to make more money from the sports book?
Just gambling alone, like I just said. I mean, it's straight gambling. They're going to get a piece of that action. I mean, I don't have the numbers with me. I'm sorry. But how much money is spent on gambling in a year, Andy? I mean, look it up in baseball, football, basketball. I would guess baseball, you know, is the least bet on sports. I would think the NFL has to be number one. And I would think the NBA is number two. I'm not 100%, but that would be my guess.
I would be inclined to agree with you, as those are two of the most watched sports in the United States. And probably with that, you know, you have all the Super Bowl odds, the finals odds, then you have all your prop bets within each game. So there's probably billions of dollars thrown around on a season-to-season basis just on those two sports alone.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Look what the NFL does. Probably 5-6 years ago, and maybe I'm wrong. You always have Monday night football. You had Sunday football. And then Sunday night football. You had Thursday night football. Look at these packages. And now look what they're doing now. Aren't they streaming games, I think, on Facebook? Aren't they going to stream games maybe on Twitter? I mean, look at that, Andy. There are so many more outlets streaming sports. The money is just not stopping. So even these guys who are buying a franchise today is a great investment. I mean, look what happened with the paperclips a couple of years ago when the gentleman from Microsoft bought it for $2 billion, and the Clippers stink. I don't care if they made the playoffs the last couple of years. They're still the paperclips. They're playing backseat to the Lakers the way the Nets play backseat to the Knicks, and where the Mets will always play backseat to the Yankees. Because the Yankees' level of a dynasty is bigger than the Lakers, but the Lakers are up there in the NBA. I mean, it'll always be that way.
And we're talking with Larry Davis, former vice president for Steiner Sports. One of the big stories in regards to people buying teams is New York's favorite son, Derek Jeter. He's part of a group that is buying, or that it was agreed to by Jeffrey Lurie to sell the Marlins to a group led by Derek Jeter. And now just got to get approved by Major League Baseball. Having a guy like Derek Jeter being the figurehead of a group buying an MLB franchise, what does that say to the rest of the league?
I love it. I mean, look at it. Now you have a player who's able to do it. And let's not forget, one of the minority owners is the greatest of all, Mr. Michael Jordan. And, you know, Mr. Jeter will definitely lean on Michael. Why not? Michael's brilliant. Michael's one of the first, is the, I think, the first billion-dollar athlete, you know, who took his athleticism and making tons of money as an NBA player and with Nike and took that Nike Air Jordan brand. It's a billion-dollar brand. He makes tons. You got Jeter, and look what they're buying. Andy, think about it. $1.2 billion for a team that loses money. I mean, think about that, man. They're in the Florida market, which is a very, very strong business market. They're losing money, and they're getting sold for $1.2 billion. I mean, now we will see how good an astute of a talent evaluator Derek is. I mean, because now it's a whole other thing. Listen, we bought the Knicks brought Phil Jackson into a GM role, and he fell flat on his face. I mean, he was not good. He thought he could be the next Pat Riley, and he is not Pat Riley. He will never get a job in the front office again, Phil Jackson. Never. He is done. He is in Montana, and he will never be seen again. Does that mean anyone like him can't? But with his resume coming in, what, he win 11 championships and a couple in the CBA, and he couldn't do it? So let's see what Derek is going to be able to do. You look at Michael Jordan. Everyone loves him. He's over there in Charlotte. I mean, he's picking the talent. I mean, Charlotte did not make the playoffs this year. They made it last year. So it is not an easy job, Andy. And again, like our president, like President Trump, you need to surround yourself with people smarter than yourself. Will Derek be able to pick the right people to be VP of operations, to be the GM? Is he going to keep Donnie Baseball? I mean, these are all questions that lie ahead. Will he keep Giancarlo Stanton and say, listen, I can't pay a guy $30 million a year, even if he hits 50 homers and slugs 100 and has 130 ribbies? Can you put all your money on one player and you have him for the next 10 years? Can you do that? I don't know. These are the decisions that Derek will have to make.
And I was reading in Newsday today, one of the names that was floating around that should the sale be approved, that one of the names that Derek Jeter would want to bring in as the general manager is the Yankees' current vice president of player operations, Gary Denbo. Do you think that would be a smart move as one of Derek Jeter's first?
Well, if I recall, isn't Gary Denbo one of Jeter's boys from the minor leagues?
Yes.
Wasn't he a... The hitting instructor or something like that?
Yes.
Didn't he help Derek when Derek did get injured? Or did Derek did have a slump? So I think the only time in his career
yep.
he had a slump. So, yeah. You know, I think what happens, Andy, you want to surround yourself with familiarity. People you know who you know are on their game, and then, of course, trust. How important is it that I can trust you? So I think that's believable. Why not? You know, Jeets wants people he can trust. He's always been a guy like that. He wants his people around him, and I don't think he's any different than anyone else. It's interesting that you said two or three times already, if it gets approved. I thought pretty much they are approved, no?
It's still going through. It's still got to go through the MLB board of directors and all the other teams, because you never know what might, kind of like the whole John Spano situation with the Islanders 20 years ago, it got approved, and he didn't have the money, so now they got to go through bigger background checks and make sure the funding is there. So, you know, you would have to think MLB is going to do its due diligence to make sure that the funding is there before any sale is
made. Yeah, I would have thought, okay, I mean, I thought they vetted him already, but okay, yeah, I guess you're right. It's just, you know, a few little procedures. But yeah, I think, you know, who would think Derek's not going to do a great job, right?
And you would hope so. I mean, especially a baseball lifer like Derek Jeter. You know, everybody loves him. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer. You would hope that he would be able to successfully transition from player life to executive life.
Well, you talk about being the first ballot Hall of Famer. Will he be the first one, Andy, that gets 100% of the vote?
I would say no, because there are people who don't vote for players on their first ballot just on principle. I think it's stupid, but that's just my opinion. I'm not a member of the Baseball Writers Association of America. I don't have a vote.
Right.
And will he beat Ken Griffey Jr.'s record of like 99.4%? He could. He very well could, because Derek Jeter is a very well-respected player. And a lot of writers are on the East Coast that saw Derek Jeter play for 20 years. And they know what he is. They know he won 5 World Series. And that he was a team captain for 12 years. And that's going to be a big factor in there, but you will have people who just don't vote for players on their first ballot just cause.
Right.
And that may not make it right, but that's their opinion, not ours.
Correct.
Speaking of Derek Jeter, you know, you worked with Steiner, and when people think Steiner Sports, that's synonymous with the Yankees, synonymous with Derek Jeter. Did you ever get to work with Derek Jeter at all?
Yeah, of course. We did plenty of Derek. Derek was a... was exclusive to our company. Met Derek plenty of times. Did autograph signings with him. Did appearances with Derek. Yeah, I thought Derek was great. I think that he's very stoic in the public. He doesn't let anyone know, but he's a lot of fun. A great guy. Once he gets comfortable with you and knows you, he's just like all of us, looking to have fun, laugh, fool around. Yeah, but I think he has that persona. And I think what happens, and I think Mark Teixeira said, and I think Tex is right, that after a while, he had this persona, so he really had to make sure he kept the persona, and he knows he really didn't think he can go do some stuff that maybe he wanted to do, not anything bad, just have some fool around kind of stuff that he did, because he was the face of the Yankees, the face of the biggest franchise in sports, and just felt he had to always be that guy. But if you knew Derek, he was a lot of fun, always fooling around, always laughing, but serious when it came down to do his job.
And when you guys landed Derek Jeter and got him as an exclusive client, how much of a boon to business was that at that time?
Well, it wasn't as big of a boon as you wanted, because Derek was like, you can't announce it, you got to keep it low-key. And me and Stein were like, you know, what? You can't announce it? You know, we really didn't. We're like, listen, we're signing you with a big deal here, you know. And I remember we did end up having a press conference at Gallagher Steakhouse. I mean, we're like, how do we not announce that, you know? So it was very low-key with him. That's the way he wanted it. And then, yeah, listen, he was the autograph everyone wanted. And, you know, you're talking about, you know, Aaron Judge being, I think you said, $350 or $375. I think we opened up with Derek, and this is 20 years ago, at a $250, $300 retail baseball signed. And then we went up to $500, and people went crazy. But no one ever got mad at Derek. You know, people paid. You know, and it went up more and more and more. So going back to Aaron Judge with his ball, you know, to answer your question in the beginning, at $375, you know, listen, when you're hot, you're hot. Right now he's hot. I mean, you know he's going to just get the AL Rookie of the Year. I mean, even as he continues to not play well, I think, what did he do today? Did he go 0-for-4 again today with a couple of strikeouts?
He had at least one, so he struck out in a record 37 straight games and counting.
Right. So, but on the other hand, you know, some of the greatest strikeout hitters, and let's include Reginald Martinez Jackson, doesn't he have the record for most strikeouts in a career?
Got to be up there. I mean, he played for a long time.
I think he does, and he has over 500 homers. So I'll ask you this, Andy, going back to Judge, you know, if you're going to get 30, 35 homers, would you take 200 strikeouts? Do you think that's a problem? Because you can have 200 strikouts, 100 walks, and 30 homers.
I'm not complaining with that. I mean, especially for a guy who's hitting third in the lineup, and for a guy his size, you know he's going to strike out. I mean, that's just common.
The only discussion I would think needs to be had, because everyone, there's so many stats out there, and everyone comes up with all these different stats. To me, the real important stat of a guy who is a MVP kind of player, and it's not just having the great stats, is runners in scoring positions. What are your ribbies with runners in scoring positions? And I'm not disrespecting a 30-homer guy and a 100-ribby guy, but if a good amount of your home runs are coming, we're already up 6-3, and it's the ninth inning, and you had a two-run shot to make it 8-3, you know what I mean? You know, I know it doesn't sound that great, but I don't really need the extra two runs. You know, when are you getting me the ribbies, being my third and fourth hitter? That's what the stats, and I don't know his stats with that, Andy. That would be an interesting thing to pull up. But what his numbers with home runs and ribbies with runners in scoring position with two outs? You know what I mean? I remember that Bonds was ridiculous on those numbers. That, to me, is what I would be really breaking down. Are you doing it when I need you to do it?
And that was actually a discussion I had with somebody earlier today who, you know, he gets frustrated when Judge strikes out in the big situations, and he said to me, Aaron Judge...
Well, who doesn't? What Yankee fan doesn't?
Apparently Joe Girardi, because he's keeping him in the third spot. But he said to me, Aaron Judge is like Alex Rodriguez. He'll hit you the home run in the ninth inning when you're up or down by five runs, but when the bases are loaded two outs and you're down by two, he's going to strike out or pop up.
Well, first thing, I don't know who said that to you. I mean, you know one of my lines. Do you know or do you think you know? I mean, Alex ended up, whether I'm a fan of Alex or not, with everything he did, because what I don't like about Alex, yeah, I know he cheated and all that stuff. I just don't get how Alex Rodriguez is now celebrated after he sues Major League Baseball. He sues the doctors of the Yankees. He sues the Yankees. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, how does that guy get exonerated from all that? And he's suing Major League Baseball, and Rob Manfred is like his best friend. I'm sorry. That stuff doesn't fly with me. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I'm not into that at all. That's what I don't like. But
and that goes to show how public perception changes like immediately.
Well, you know why? Because that one year he had 33 homers, supposedly not on juice, so everybody jumped back on his wagon. If he had last year's numbers the year before, batting .211 and couldn't hit, forget it. He'd be vilified. Nobody would like him. Because he had 30-some on homers that one year, that was it. That changed everything. That can't change for me. I'm sorry. You sued everybody you could. You did not care. But the guy had 600 homers. So wherever your friend said that his homers were when they didn't count, that guy, I'm sorry, that guy, that's ridiculous. That guy is just talking. Okay, he doesn't know what he's talking about. So you had monster years from Alex. Don't tell me that those 45 home, 130 ribbies, all of them were when it didn't matter. No. You can't. He carried ball club. The guy was just too good for your buddy to say that. And again, with Aaron Judge, I just said to you, I don't know the stats. Are those the stats with Aaron Judge? I don't know. So I think your friend or whoever was talking was just talking. I don't think they have the stats to back that up.
Right, that may have also been frustration in the fact that he had struck out for the 37th straight game. And that,
yeah, but you know, everyone can be frustrated, but is this who the guy is? You know, last year, this is what the guy did. You know, somebody put, I think it was Joel Sherman in the Post, you know, showed the last, whatever, say 150 at-bats since the All-Star break, right? And 150 at-bats last year, the numbers were pretty much the same. You know, like 6-7 homers, 60 strikeouts. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know the numbers, so I can't give them to you exactly, but the numbers look the same as what he did last year. So really the question is, there was a TV show many, many years ago that our parents watched, you and I did not, and it was called To Tell the Truth. And, you know, who is the real Aaron Judge? Will the real Aaron Judge stand up? Is it the guy from last year, or is it the guy from the first half of this year? Again, sports is all consistency. Okay, there is plenty of one-hit wonders. So in reality, he will walk away with the Rookie of the Year. I don't know if he's going to get the MVP. I don't know who else is up for it, but I don't know if he'll get the MVP. But I also think that we will see what happens next year. That's going to be the real judge, the Aaron Judge.
All right, I got one more question before I let you go, Larry. Would marketing Aaron Judge as the face of Major League Baseball be best for business?
Absolutely not. You know, he's the same age as Mike Trout. So does people realize that Mike Trout's been in the game for 5 years and been top five MVP every single year he played? Are you kidding me? We're putting Aaron Judge of the as the MVP when Mike Trout is the face of baseball? Absolutely not. It's Mike Trout. Not even a question.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime, bro. Take care.
All right. That was Larry Davis, the former vice president of Steiner Sports, and talking about the big B of sports, billions. Money is everywhere in sports, and that is never going to change. Sports is about the money, no matter what anybody says, no matter what anybody will want you to believe that they say they play for the love of the game. No, you're getting paid, and you're getting paid a lot more than a lot of other people that can only wish that they would get the contracts that you get. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Sun Devil football with Derek Hagan. You're listening to Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now back to the show.
And we are back here for the second half of Hour 2 of Sports Talk 1240. I am your host, Andy Sukoff. We'll be having Derek Hagan coming on momentarily. But it's August, and kids are going back to college, and that means college football is right around the corner. And that excites me as a football fan, because I really enjoy getting up on a Saturday morning, sitting down, watching ESPN, watching College Game Day, and then at noon, watching that first kickoff and the beginning of the season where you have some of those marquee matches, where you have Texas playing Notre Dame or USC playing Oklahoma in these out-of-conference games that make for great TV. And you watch these kids play. And a lot of them have NFL aspirations. Some don't. And that's what makes it fun. You know, some of those guys are out there playing like it's their last game because it very well could be. And then you have those guys who you know you're going to see on Sunday afternoons suiting up for your favorite team or against your favorite team that when you were watching them when they were in school, it's like, I love this guy. Then he plays for your rivals. Like, oh, I hate this guy. Like pretty much anybody who played at Arizona State for me that now plays for the New England Patriots. Those guys, I always respect everything they did in Sun Devil Maroon and Gold, but now that they wear navy blue and red, I can't stand it. It makes me a little crazy. We will be welcoming on Derek Hagan, former New York Giant wide receiver who played at Arizona State University. He was a wide receiver there until 2005. Got drafted by the Miami Dolphins, played there under Alabama legend Nick Saban, then went on to play for the Giants, played for the Oakland Raiders and a couple other teams before retiring from the NFL. And he is now the sideline reporter for KTAR's coverage of Sun Devil football. So he's kind of going back to where it all started. So we're just waiting on him. But until then, Arizona State last year, it started out pretty well, and then the wheels kind of came off, losing six games to end the season. And the defense did not really end well. With that, Brian, do we have okay, we're going to welcome Derek Hagan. Derek, thank you for taking the time to join me tonight.
No problem, man. Appreciate you having me.
Okay, we're going to jump right into it. ASU last year, they started out of the gate pretty hot. They won, I think, four in a row to start out the season, and then it just kind of tailspun once they got into conference play. What happened last year that caused that struggle in the midway point of the season?
Well, there was just a lot that went on a season ago. You know, when you get off to that hot start, you know, you start the season off, you know, at 5-1, really. Then, you know, next thing you know, it was just, you know, a lot of injuries just started happening to this team. Now, not to use injuries as an excuse, because, you know, obviously there's injuries in all sports, and you got to have that next man up mentality. But they just dealt with so many injuries across the board, and it just started really at the quarterback position. You know, when you're down to when you start off with Manny Wilkins, he goes down with a leg injury. Then you bring in Brady White, and he ends up breaking his foot. Then you go down to your third string quarterback, Dillon Sterling Cole, who was not even expected to play a season ago, and he gets thrust onto the field. And you know, he didn't look that well, but you know, those things happen. So when you're going through three different quarterbacks during the season, things do get tough, but it was a tough season, and we'll see how they bounce back this year.
Well, speaking of Manny Wilkins, he's now back, and you know, as we're only 10 days away from that opening game against New Mexico State, what have you seen from Manny Wilkins leading up to this opening game?
I think for Manny, it's just all about grind. You know, a season ago, you know, he had no playing experience. None of the quarterbacks on ASU roster attempted not one pass in the game, and you know, he finally got some experience under his belt a season ago, starting 10 games, but he didn't play that well because he did play more than half the season, basically he was 50-60% when he was out there on the field once he got hurt. But, you know, from everything that I've been seeing out at camp, you know, it's just been so far so good. You know, Todd Graham wants a leader at the quarterback position. He wants the guy to be able to lead, you know, not only the team, but also the other 10 guys on the field. And I think for Manny, you know, I think that he's, so far, it's so good. You know, obviously, he's taken that upon himself to be a better pocket passer, which is just going to make this offense evolve a whole lot more because he's very dangerous with his feet. But if he can be patient and go through his reads in the pocket and deliver the ball down the field to his playmakers, I think the sky is going to be the limit for this offense because, you know, they did average 33 points a game last season, but it was just, you know, a tough year once, you know, all those injuries started mounting up.
And last year they put up 391 yards per game offensively, which is phenomenal. I mean, not many teams put up 400 yards a game. But this year, they have, as their backup quarterback, Blake Barnett, a five-star transfer from Alabama. What kind of competition did Barnett provide for Wilkins going into this year?
Well, that's what it's all about. You know, if you're not able to compete, you shouldn't be out there on the football field. And I think that's what Graham wants to see. He wants to see competition at each and every position because the quarterback position is the most important position on the football field. You know, the guy, the ball is in his hands, you know, 99% of the time. It's always going to be in the QB's hands before he delivers it to somebody else. But with bringing Blake Barnett along, you know, it just creates a whole lot of competition. You know, like you said, he's a five-star recruit. I think he's got a big arm. He delivers the ball down the field very well, and he's also mobile at the same time. So, you know, as of right now, you know, this is Manny Wilkins' job. You know, Graham has said it's his job to lose, but, you know, I feel like Manny has been performing well so far. You know, in camp, you know, I think they just broke camp, but we're a few weeks away, and I'm expecting Manny Wilkins to be under center come week one against New Mexico State.
And we're talking with Derek Hagan, the sideline reporter for Sun Devil Football on KTAR. The Sun Devil offense is bringing back a ton of weapons, including the 7-touchdown man Kalen Ballage, DeMario Richard, N'Keal Harry, and they got a lot of weapons out there, which we haven't seen in a few years since they had guys like Jalen Strong and DJ Foster. What kind of noise can that offense make? Could they potentially put up 40 a game?
I mean, I think so. You know, with they're going through another offensive coordinator. You know, this is their third offensive coordinator in 3 years. You know, Mike Norvell, you know, now he's the head coach at Memphis. And then Chip Lindsey a year ago, now he's offensive coordinator at Auburn. Then you bring in a guy like Billy Napier, who's coming over from Alabama. And, you know, he's bringing that winning attitude. And when you look at this offense, I think Coach Napier understands he's got playmakers across the board. And it's all about putting these guys in the right position to succeed because, you know, this team is a run-first offense. And last season, they were not able to establish the run, you know, later on in the season. Both Kalen Ballage and DeMario Richards, they had off years. And I think both guys barely had over 500 yards rushing, which is pretty low for this type of offense that they have. You know, after that 8-touchdown game that Kalen Ballage had early on in the season against Texas Tech, it pretty much went downhill from there, and they weren't able to establish the run early on in ball games, and it really forced this offense to really drop back and throw the ball down the field. But when you look at it, a lot of people are sleeping on this ASU offense. Like I said, you know, with N'Keal Harry, then you bring in John Humphrey, a transfer from Oklahoma. This team's going to be tough. You know, the offense is stacked. There's playmakers across the board, and I'm excited to see what they do. They can put up 40 points a game, depending on the play calling and the execution.
So besides John Humphrey, the transfer from Oklahoma, who else is a newcomer this year that's going to be expected to make a big impact for the Sun Devil offense this year?
Well, you know what? I can really say it really starts up front. You know, the offensive line. You know, obviously the O line. You know, not too many people talk about offensive linemen. You know, they don't get all the glitz and glamour like the skill positions do. But it starts up front with them. You know, if they're able to keep Manny Wilkins clean and open some holes for DeMario and Kalen, the sky's going to be the limit. You know, last season the offensive line, they didn't have no playing experience either. They only had one returning starter. Now I think this year they got three or four starters returning, led by Sam Jones and A.J. McCollum and Cole Cabral. So, you know, if they're able to establish the line of scrimmage and Manny's, you know, able to do his thing, you know, watch out. But I'm excited about this offense. Another guy to keep an eye on is Jalen Harvey. You know, he's been in this offense, a wide receiver. He's been in this offense for a few seasons now, and I think he's going to be the X factor for this receiving corps.
Okay. We're going to take it to the other side of the ball. The ASU defense last year, I don't know what happened, but they were susceptible to the big play, and that was to the tune of giving up 521 yards per game defensively, which is, I mean, if you're trying to win games, that's unacceptable. You can't be giving up 500 yards a game and expect to win.
Oh, there's no way. You know, that, you know, just being a former Sun Devil, a former player for myself, that was just flat out embarrassing. You know, just plain and simple. It was nonsense. That should never happen. And that really comes down to the players and how much you want it, especially playing against your rival. You know, you're going against your down south rival, the Arizona Wildcats, and for them to rush for 500 yards and they didn't look good at all a season ago. That's just all who wants it more, and it seemed like that team wanted it more. But you know, the only way this defense, they only can go get better. That's what it comes down to. You know, obviously the last 2 years the defense has not been playing that well. They haven't been creating enough turnovers, but at the same time, they've been giving up a lot of big plays. You know, hopefully they'll be able to eliminate that with defensive quarter Phil Bennett coming over from Baylor. So the only way they're going to get better is just by going up, and they got to put in that time and that effort to get the job done.
And they got a few big names coming back, guys like Tashaun Smallwood. And is he going to be expected to be one of the leaders of this defensive unit this year?
The front seven is the heart and soul of this defense. When you look at Tayshaun Smallwood, JoJo Wickers returning, Christian Sam, who missed all of last season after the first game against NAU, was back, their starting linebacker. DJ Calhoun is also back. And then Karan Crump, one of the best outside linebackers in a Pac-12. They're going to create some noise. You know, I think that the biggest concern, once again, is in the secondary, because you lose two starters, Armon Perry to a medical retirement and Kareem Orr to a transfer. So now you're trying to replace four guys in the secondary, and now you're trying to figure out who's going to be the right fit on a secondary that has given up the most yardage, you know, in the Pac-12 and NCAA. You know, they've obviously been one of the worst secondaries, but it's all about putting the right guys in, and I think Phil Bennett can do that.
I mean, like, when I was the Sun Devil, I was a little spoiled. I had Omar Bolden on one side, Irabor on the other, and then you had Perfect in the middle. So it's like, I mean, that's kind of hard to stop.
Right, yeah. I mean, those are obviously some great former Sun Devils. You know, you got a linebacker like Perfect and a corner like Bolden. I think ASU was trying to find a corner of Omar Bolden's status. You know, I think they got a couple good JC transfers that are coming in that are expected to play right away. But a guy that I really got my eye on is Chase Lucas, the DB out of Chandler, Arizona. You know, he's obviously a top high school recruit. He's young, he's tenacious, and I think he's ready to roll. You know, the sky's going to be the limit for this kid, but he's just got to put it all together and go out there and perform just to make this team a whole lot better.
Interestingly enough, Derek, I was looking at the stats from last year. Even though they gave up as many yards as they did, they were 32nd in the FBS in third down defense, allowing only a 35.8% success rate for opponent offense, which is pretty good. I mean, if they can continue at that clip and keep some of those big plays down, they're gonna find ways to win those games that they were losing last year.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to. You got to make the play when the play presents itself, and you know that's been the struggle over the past few seasons. You know, 5-6 and 5-7 obviously is not good enough. I think, after those two 10-win seasons, that's what we expect to see. You know, we expect to compete for Pac-12 South titles and the Pac-12 South championships each and every year, and that's what we should be doing. That's what Graham preaches. That's what we should be striving for. So it's all about this defense, creating turnovers and eliminating those big plays. You know, when they got those 2-win seasons, they were tops in the country, top 15 as far as creating turnovers, and that's what you need to do. You create turnovers, that creates a big play, that gives a defense and an offense more momentum, and obviously it's going to help the players' confidence out a whole lot more.
We're talking with Derek Hagan from Sun Devil Football. The Pac-12 South, especially this year, and the Pac-12 as a whole is going to be a very strong conference, but the Pac-12 South, you have two potential teams in USC and UCLA that could make big runs this year towards the playoffs with strong quarterback play from Sam Darnold and Josh Rosen, two of the expected top picks in the NFL draft next year. How competitive do you see the Pac-12 South being with everybody considered?
Well, it's very competitive. It's been like this each and every year. These teams from top to bottom. You know, obviously USC has gotten their mojo back. UCLA has got one of the best quarterbacks in the country in Josh Rosen. So it's just it's definitely a competitive league. You know, a lot of people need to be aware of what's going on in the Pac-12 South, not even just the Pac-12 South, maybe the Pac-12 North as well with Washington. You know, this team was in the college football playoffs a year ago, so it's competitive. And each and every week, you're going to have to bring your A game. You know, you can't look forward to a week further. You know, if you're playing USC 1 week, that's what your mindset needs to be. It doesn't need to be looking forward to playing UCLA because you never know what can happen. You know, most of these teams in the Pac-12 have great quarterbacks and they're able to throw the ball around the field. So you got to be able to play a tough stout defense and also be able to run the ball at the same time.
And is that enough to make people here on the East Coast, you know, those games start at 10, 11 o'clock. Is that enough incentive to get people to be watching Pac-12 football on a weekly basis when most people only see the Pac-12 on Pac-12 after dark?
Yeah, and I think that's a big-time problem with the Pac-12 and the Pac-12 network is, you know, obviously the Pac-12 does not get that much exposure on the East Coast, you know. On the East Coast, you know, when the games come on, that's 10 o'clock Eastern, and by that time, you know, everybody on the East Coast has been probably drinking all day and watching football, and, you know, they're ready to go to sleep. So, you know, I know when I was playing for ASU, you know, we used to play at those 12:30 games that were, you know, 3:30 on the East Coast on ABC, and everybody got to see us play. You know, even though it was 110 degrees outside, we were still out there performing at the same time. So, you know, obviously the Pac-12, it would be nice if the rest of the country got a chance to see the Pac-12 play, but if not, it's okay because we know on the West Coast that there's some competitive football out here. You know, a lot of top players come out of the state of California across the country. A lot of these guys go off to the NFL and play. So it's a lot of good football being played on the West Coast.
And you're talking how you would play in 110 degree weather. I've been on the field at Sun Devil Stadium during August, September when it's 108 degrees and it's like 120 on the field. Do you feel that gave you guys a psychological advantage when you see the other team running out there and they'd probably already be sweating and you guys are like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, that's a big time advantage because, you know, even just let's just say if the Sun Devils had to go play, you know, in New York or somewhere. You know, obviously cold weather, if they got to go to New York in late October, November, December, you know, it might be, you know, 30 degrees and snowing. So it's obviously a psychological advantage. So I wish they would play a lot more 12:30, 1 o'clock games. You know, if they're not going to play them in, let's just say, late August, September, at least October, November, you know, let the Sun Devils play around 12:30, 1 o'clock, you know, because sometimes, you know, you get those early day games in because as a former player, trying to wait all day to play at 7 o'clock, you know, that could be pretty taxing because you're sitting there watching football all day, laying down in a hotel bedroom, you know, for 10, 15 hours before you play. So that's a long wait, but hopefully one of these days they'll be able to change that.
I remember the game against Notre Dame 3 years ago that ASU won. I think that pushed them into the top 10 that year. It was 2014. Were you on the sideline for that game?
No, I was actually. I was still playing in the NFL at that time, but I had a had a chance to watch it. So I remember that game very, very, very well.
I love the fact that being on the East Coast and that game was like a 3 o'clock game that you were able to sit and watch the whole game, and it was still almost light out when the game ended, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's a great thing because, you know, that's just more exposure for this Sun Devil football team as far as recruitment is concerned. You know, when players on the East Coast can, you know, see these maroon and gold uniforms with the Pitchfork logo on a helmet. That's just more exposure. You know, a lot of these teams on the East Coast get all the exposure, but, you know, bring some of that over to the West Coast. If we can play those early games, more teams on the, or more fans in general will be able to see this Sun Devil football team perform.
Do you wish they should put Sparky back on the helmet, or do you like the Pitchfork?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. I think I like the Pitchfork a little more. You know, I'm a Sparky guy, but I think the Pitchfork just brings a whole lot more swag. It's a little more intimidating than any Sparky on the side of the helmet.
I'm with you on that, Derek. We're talking with Derek Hagan. You played here in New York. You played for the Giants, and you got to play with Eli Manning. Do you see any similarities between, you know, what you learned under Eli Manning and what you see on the college game, or is it a completely different level?
Well, it's a completely different level. You know, obviously the the NFL is a lot faster. It's a lot I would say it's a lot more detailed than college football. Even though college football is detailed, but guys understand it in the pros, it's, you know, it's your job. You know, this is your livelihood. This is what you're getting paid to do. And, you know, you got to understand, you got to show up each and every day. You know, college, it's almost like, you know, you got a guaranteed 4 years at your university. You know, pro football, you know, you might not be guaranteed 1 week, you know, if you're not performing well in practice or in a game. You know, if you do something wrong, you know, they just might cut you. And when you think about it, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a 90-man roster right now, but in a few weeks, you know, these rosters are going to get cut down to 53 men. And that's a lot of guys that won't be playing in an NFL this year. And some of these guys might be the last time they play on an NFL roster.
And when you did play for the Giants, what was one of the biggest things you learned from Coach Tom Coughlin? You know, the guy did win two Super Bowls, and I'm sure he had a lot of wisdom to throw out to younger players like yourself and the rest of the roster.
Yeah, I mean, Coughlin, I mean, I think he's by far one of the greatest coaches in pro football history. You know, I think he was just a leader of men. You know, guys respected him a whole lot. And, you know, we understood and we all wanted to play for him, you know, because he got us motivated to play. You know, he made sure we were prepared. He made sure we understood the task that was at hand. And he brought out the best in each and every player. You know, obviously at times, you know, it did get tough. You know, Tom Coughlin was one of those rough edges type coaches that really brought it to you. And that's what you want. You know, obviously, you know, I'm mad at myself for missing both of those Super Bowl championships because I missed the window. But, you know, that's what it's all about. It's all about winning championships. And when you got a coach that can be a leader of men, you're going to have everybody else follow. And that's exactly what that organization is all about. Is all about winning, and that's what you want.
Do you see similar qualities in Todd Graham on the Tempe campus that you saw with any of your pro coaches like Nick Saban or Coughlin?
Yeah, I do, because, you know, in college it's all about developing young men. You know, obviously it's these kids range from anywhere from 17 to 21 or 22. You know, the pro, once you get to pro, you're basically on your own. You know, you got to show up prepared each and every day. And being in college, you know, there's not just football all day. You also have class. And I think Todd Graham preaches that very well as far as developing these players and watching, you know, some of these kids grow. You know, if you're not able to make it that far in the NFL, you know, a lot of these guys are getting set up where they have jobs once they graduate from college. So I think Coach Graham and his whole staff does a phenomenal job as far as developing these players and watching them grow over the years.
And if they do struggle this year, do you believe that he's going to be on the hot seat at the end of the season?
I mean, I think whenever you're not winning, you're going to be in a hot seat, period. So that just comes with the territory. That's football. You know, your job is to win games. That's what it comes down to, is winning. You know, nobody's going to sit there and be rooting for the losers. You know, obviously only one team can win week in and week out. But, you know, that's what we want to see. When I'm just out here in Arizona, we want to see victories. You know, we want to see this team competing for Pac-12 South Championship, competing for Pac-12 Championships in general, and getting to that Rose Bowl. Look, Arizona State has not been to a Rose Bowl since 1996. That's 21 years, and it's about time. I feel like we get back there.
I'm in agreement with that.
So it's been a long time, but I think we're getting there. We're on the right track, but it's all about winning. You know, 5-7 a season ago is not good enough. I'm looking forward to this team really bouncing back and competing and really creating a lot of noise in the Pac-12 this season.
All right, we got a couple more minutes with you, Derek. Besides, obviously, the Territorial Cup game against Arizona at the end of November, what's the game that you have circled on your schedule that you're saying, I can't wait for this one?
Well, ASU, they got a tough home stretch. They got Colorado coming in. They got Washington coming in. But I think the game that got Arizona coming in, the down south rival, which I can't stand. But I think it's the USC game. You know, they come back to Tempe, and I think there's a lot of unfinished business between Arizona State and USC. You know, they really put a thumping on the Sun Devils a year ago in the L.A. Memorial Coliseum. But I think that game will really, really tell us, you know, where this Sun Devil football team is going to go this season, playing against a, you know, explosive team like the USC Trojans.
And ASU, over the last 6-7 years, have had success against USC at Sun Devil Stadium. One of the more recent games, I think back in 2011 or 2012, where you had that big picture of Vontaze Burfict pointing at Matt Barkley, ready to run him down, and they just smoked them that game. And I think the year after, or a couple years after that, they wound up beating USC again at Sunnyvale Stadium. So maybe that home field advantage really does help, even against a team like USC with that kind of talent.
Yeah, it does help. Home field advantage always helps. Like I said, they got a great home schedule this year. San Diego State coming in, Oregon, Washington, like I said, SC, Colorado, and Arizona. So they got all these big games at home. It's all about taking one game at a time in the Pac-12, because any given week you never know what can happen. But home field advantage is big time. It helps a whole lot, especially in this new Sun Devil Stadium, this $258 million renovation that they're still going through. The stadium is beautiful, and we obviously want to sell out each and every week. You know, games like that, it's like why can't we? Why can't we do that each and every week? Have the fans in there screaming at the top of their lungs and helping this team and leading this team to victory. So it's an exciting time. We're a few weeks away from kickoff, and I can't wait.
All right, Derek, we're going to let you go. Thank you for taking the time, and I'll be sure to be listening at that first game against New Mexico State.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, man.
You got it. That was Derek Hagan, the sideline reporter for Sun Devil Football on KTAR, 98.7 FM, 620 AM. So August 31st, Arizona State, New Mexico State. If you want to listen to some fun, exciting, high-octane football, that's the game to listen to. All right, that's going to wrap it up here on Sports Talk 1240. My next show will be month from now. We'll have some more fun guests. I always got to thank my man Brian Graves back there making it all happen. Have a good night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.